juicy fruit. The taste is gonna move ya. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Storage Room Movie Boom. I'm Eden.
I'm Sam.
This is the podcast where two adult siblings talk about movies in their parents' basement.
Show is.
It absolutely is. Sam and I were just chatting off mic about
yes,
how
we
wish this movie was a good bad watch like Congo.
Yeah. I mean, I very rarely adhere to the thought that, oh, it's so bad, it's good. But in the case of Congo, that's
classic.
True. That's the only movie that I will say that for.
Oh, it's so good.
Because there's stuff that's genuinely good in it.
So this one, and we'll get into it. This one that we watched for this week, pitched last week, was The Mummy from 2017. What was supposed to be the beginning of the Dark Universe, although I have some additional information on that on the fact sheet, with Tom Cruise. And boy, was it a film.
It was... What is it? Murphy's Law, where everything that can go wrong does go wrong.
Sure. Absolutely.
That's basically this movie.
I think I've boiled it down, and we'll speak about this as we get into it. I think I've boiled it down to one key issue. And while there are many issues, I think there's one thing that could have really resolved a lot of the issues with it, I find.
Okay.
Okay. Got it. All right, guys. So speaking of, last week we watched... Spider-Man 3. And at the end of Spider-Man 3, Sam pitched to me three movies inspired by the kind of mummy-esque vibe of the Sandman, right?
Correct. Because the effects used for a lot of the Sandman shots reminded me of the Mummy. So I pitched the three versions of the Mummy from 1932, 1999, and 2017.
And I chose the 2017 Mummy.
Because you enjoy pain, apparently.
Apparently. So... before we get into how we watched this, our history with this movie and all of that information, let's go through the fact sheet really quickly. This movie was released June 9th, 2017. It's an hour and 50 minutes. Not going to lie, almost 2 hours, but I was pretty intrigued the whole time.
This felt like it was a 2.5 hour long movie. This felt like it dragged.
I think because, as I told you, I was like, oh, I've seen it before. And as I was watching this, I was like, oh, you definitely slept through 47% of this. So it all was a new movie to me. But it seemed to go quickly, but maybe that's because it felt like a new thing. But an hour and 50 minutes. It's directed by Alex Kurtzman. The writers were David Kep, Christopher McQuarrie, Dylan Cussman, and the stories by John Spotts, Alex Kurtzman, and Jenny Lumet.
The tragic part of this movie is that they had some talented people work on it. David Koepp has been in the industry forever. He did Jurassic Park.
Yep.
He did, I think, Spider-Man 1. Maybe mm-hmm. he did some of the other ones.
Yeah.
Alex Kurtzman is one of, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of the J.J. Abrams brain trust.
He might be, yeah.
Him and Lindelof and Roberto Orsi, mm-hmm. I think, are kind of part of that group.
That group, yeah.
They came up together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, just because you have talented people on it doesn't mean you can polish a turd. Well, this was his first time directing. So if there's a lot of directing faux pas, that's because it was his first go as a director. He's been, like I mentioned, he's been around for years doing producing. And I think he's done some, you know, writing credits and so on.
I would say
on.
The writing is the biggest issue for me.
Well, yeah, there's, well, yeah.
Well, we'll get into that.
I agree.
The writing is quite shit. Okay, let's get into the rest of the fact sheet before we get into analysis of it. So the synopsis from IMDb, an ancient Egyptian princess is awakened from her crypt beneath the desert, bringing with her malevolence grown over the millennia and terrors that defy human comprehension.
There. All right. Very well done.
Better.
In a world
where...
where crap is thrown onto movie screens.
Oh, crap. And we'll see what sticks, and it ain't a lot. The reviews for this movie, based on our favorite website, Rotten Tomatoes. The film was given an approval rating of 16% based on 314 reviews. Not surprising. The audience score was 35%.
Generous by the audience.
Agreed. And then the average rating on Metacritic was 34 out of 100.
Very generous by Metacritic.
Exactly. Oof.
Woof. But again, it seems like Metacritic is a bit more stable. Like their range is varies wildly.
Correct. Yeah. I think that even though, as we've noted on other episodes, where it feels like Metacritic doesn't go higher than like an 80, you know, I think that it they are a little more consistent in their strict rating system. The cast: Tom Cruise as Nick Morton, Sophia Boutella as Amanet,
Menomina.
Annabelle Wallace as Jenny Halsey.
We'll just call her the girl, because that's basically her defining characteristic.
That is her defining characteristic. But he says the word Jenny, I don't know, 8,000 times in this fucking movie.
And not even like Forrest Gump says Jenny.
He said Jenny. And I'm like, it sounds awkward every time he fucking says it.
Jenny and the
Speaking of JJs, Jake Johnson as Chris Vale. Get into my thoughts on that. Courtney B. Vance as Colonel Greenway. Totally underused and underappreciated in this movie. Russell Crowe as Dr. Henry Jekyll / Mr. Edward Hyde.
Chewing the scenery a little
bit. Marwan Kenzari as Malik, who is the head of the of Dr. Jekyll's like armed forces guys. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't even got it.
And then Javier Botet as Set, which I didn't even realize he actually got like a
right.
Yeah, I know. He was listed on the cast. Those are the big names.
That's weird. Okay.
Hi, Dios mio. So let's go ahead and get into some of these random bits of trivia and facts. And as many people probably know, if you've seen this movie or if you're at all into kind of universe type of franchise movies, Universal wanted to make this into their more modern version of their classic movie monster series, and they were going to call it the Dark Universe.
And honestly, I love that idea of bringing back the Universal monsters, putting them in a cohesive, you know, thing.
I love it.
Now, did you ever see, and I forget how many years ago prior to this, I think it was a couple years, a year or two, Dracula Untold?
No, but I looked it up for this.
I watched it, and some people have speculated that might have been...
It was supposed to be.
Yeah, it was supposed to be. Honestly... That one was kind of forgettable, but I don't think it was objectively like crap. Like
terrible.
This.
Yeah. So let me go
Luke
ahead.
Evans is who I was thinking of. He was Dracula.
Who was?
Luke Evans.
Who dat?
He's the guy that looks exactly like Orlando Bloom.
So I wouldn't know him if I saw him.
It's the Skeet Ulrich, Johnny Depp situation from 20 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it. Luke Evans.
I'm pretty sure it's Luke Evans. Crap. Hold on. I'm going to consult.
No. I'm just saying I looked up that movie. I didn't look at the main players.
That's him. Luke Evans.
What else has he been in? Would I know anything?
Well, he was in the Hobbit movies.
What? Oh, I didn't watch the Hobbit movies. Sorry.
Well, yeah. That's a tale for another time, as they say. gosh, what in the world? Apparently he was in Beauty and the Beast, the live action. He was in that show, The Alienist, with
was he?
Those people.
Yeah, with those people and the small girl that's now.
He was one of the big three.
Yep.
Oh, apparently he was in Fast and Furious 6.
Mm-hmm.
And Murder Mystery, the Adam Sandler, Jennifer Aniston vehicle.
Oh, sure.
So there we go.
That classic. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, him if you see him, if you don't realize he's not.
I did actually start to watch The Alienist, and it was dark and interesting Victorian. And the main weird guy is, what's his name, from the Captain America series.
Yeah. I forget his name.
Now I can't remember his name. People are yelling at home. Anyway, he was in it. And then girl that used to be small and now she's a woman whose name I can't remember.
Fanning. Dakota Fanning.
Yeah. Right.
Or is it? Yeah. Elle is her younger sister.
Yes.
Elle Fanning. So this is Dakota
Fanning. Yeah. She's a real grown up person now.
So quote unquote.
Well, I'm sure.
She's still fairly small.
She's a tiny human.
Yeah.
But she is, I think, probably 30 at least.
Oh, yeah. She's older. She's just bigger.
She just didn't get any bigger. Remember how when she was tiny back in the day, she's still that size.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you watch Signs and it's basically the same thing as now as it was then.
She wasn't in Signs.
She was. Oh, wait. No, that was Abigail Breslin.
Yeah, it was.
Dammit. All these. Anyway.
We have gone off the rails.
I am drinking. Is it Evan Williams?
Oh, shit. We don't know because Dad mixed up the fucking bottles.
I think I'm going to say I'm drinking Evan Williams with this tonight.
There you go. I'm drinking Chattanooga. Is it the rye? Or is it just the...
I don't think it's the rye. It's too light for a rye.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe we should start pairing whiskeys and drinks with our movies.
I like that. That's a good idea. I think it's a pretty popular move for podcasts, but I think that if we just always drink whiskey and it explains a lot of what happens over the next hour and a half.
Yeah, it's true. It's an out for us to have all kinds of bloopers and there so on go. Like that.
So speaking about the Dark Universe, which I agree with you, I think is a rad idea. I do think that they probably just obviously glommed on to what Marvel was doing. With
Everyone was.
So let me read this. This is a bit from IMDb. The film was a part of the Universal Pictures Dark Universe, an attempt to create a modern cinematic universe based on the classic Universal Monsters film series. A remake of The Bride of Frankenstein was originally scheduled for release on February 14th, 2019, but on October 5th, 2017, 2 years earlier, Universal decided to postpone it to allow more work to be done on the script. In 2014, the film Dracula Untold was originally considered to be the first film in the series. However, since the film's release, the connection to the Dark Universe was downplayed, and The Mummy was then repositioned to be the first in that film of the series. By 2019, Universal announced plans to return to standalone features instead of using a shared film narrative, effectively ending the universe.
And yet, they've never made another monster movie since that point.
I know. I mean,
and
like,
honestly, if they, I don't necessarily know that they needed one thing when you turn on this movie, mm-hmm. and even I didn't realize this, it's like Universal Pictures and then immediately slaps on a Dark Universe title
card.
It
really does.
Like, okay, guys, you haven't earned this.
No, they were jumping right in. They were like, we're making this a thing. We want you to know it's going to be a thing yeah. and that you have something to look forward to in the future. Because, you know, when we spoke about this last week and you were like, oh, this is supposed to be the beginning of the Dark Universe. Mm-hmm. I thought this was just maybe like, you know, common, not layman knowledge, but like if you're in the know as far as like this kind of thing,
right.
that might just be common knowledge, but nothing that was like advertised. No, it's right the fuck up there.
Yeah, they don't hide it. They don't walk away from it. Mm-hmm. It's right there and it blows up in their face.
Yes. So
the thing is, if they had like done the Dracula movie as part of this, I don't know. I think it would have gone over better. Now, honestly, I don't think you need a big title card. This yeah. is the Dark Universe. Like just organically try and
exactly.
build something. Well, don't yes, just slap it on the front and say, here it is.
Well, they already introduced Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde in this movie. You know that it's going to be a shared universe. This right. is another character from movie monster history that is integrated into this. And they introduced the idea of the Prodigium, the secret society.
Oh, my gosh. They use that name?
I had to look it up on on Wikipedia.
Okay.
Because I heard him and I rewound it twice. That Russell Crowe kind of said something. He's like, this is the thing. And I was like, oh, is that the name of like the lab where they're at? Or if
I assumed it was like the name of the building or something.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe he did say that, but on Wikipedia it says Prodigium is a secret society dedicated to hunting supernatural threats. So they already introduce this group of people because Blondie works for them, right? In the movie. So Blonde Girl.
Yeah, there's a lot there that doesn't make sense.
So Blonde
that.
Girl works with them. She works with, well, spoiler alert, this whole thing's a spoiler alert. She works for them. So they've already introduced this kind of hub that could act as the center, the nucleus for this world of monster movies.
Right.
Like fucking just keep going.
Yeah.
No, what's ever stopped anybody from making a bad movie? Like, come on.
Nothing.
Just keep doing it. If anything, people love a bad good watch, as we were talking about with Congo. Mm-hmm. I mean, this movie was shit. And if they came up with another one, I'll be honest, I think people, especially now that people are staying at home and watching it via streaming, people might watch it.
Yeah. The venue depends too. I mean, they weren't going to, I forget how much money they put into this, but they wouldn't put this much into a potential follow-up.
No.
if you had said, you know, you can make a follow up to this, whatever it be, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, whatever, mm-hmm. for half the cost and throw it on a streaming service, they might do it.
I mean, they had a couple of knowing, and obviously I think it's quite obvious to everybody that watches this, like you just said at the title sequence, when it's like the Dark Universe or whatever mm-hmm. it is. So because of that, I was trying to make note of things that I saw throughout the movie. I was like, oh, this is what they were hinting at for future movies. So like, obviously, just introducing Dr. Jekyll slash Mr. Hyde, mm-hmm. introducing him and what he's about and his whole lab. While his henchmen walk Tom Cruise through a room full of jars and shit, you see the vampire skull, yep. you see like the aquatic hand thing. Yep. Like there's, I'm like, okay, there's setting the seeds.
This movie feels like a mishmash of a lot of movies. And mm-hmm. one of those movies is Iron Man 2. where I don't know the last time you watched Iron Man 2.
I have seen it, but it's been a long time. But they
had several segments crammed into that movie of Nick Fury and Iron Man or Tony Stark meeting up, basically previewing the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And that's what this felt like to me.
Yeah, they were just setting up some other movies. And I think because we had so much meta knowledge going into watching this, you know?
Yep.
We already knew it was a flop. We knew that this dark universe wasn't going to continue further. So I think we came at this with a little bit of a more educational eye and could really kind of piece together what they were trying to do. Maybe mm-hmm. if you watched this in the theater when it came out, you'd be like, oh, I'm interested. I'm not sure where they're going with this. You know, so I feel like we were in a fortunate place. So, for example, one of the things that I was like, is that an Easter egg? And I saw in my notes. It was, which was that the book from Dr. Jekyll's library that Jenny, blonde girl, uses to knock out adversary. An adversary is the Book of Amun-Ra from The Mummy in 1999.
Yeah, she slapped him in the face with a reference from a far better movie.
And it was, well, I was like, ooh, a gold book. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, but the thing is, I haven't seen those movies.
I'm sorry, what?
I haven't seen those movies. Did I say that?
I'm sorry. Give me that one more time.
I have not seen those movies.
What the hell is wrong with you?
No.
I watched those.
I have seen them. You didn't let me fucking finish my sentence. I have not seen those movies in a long time.
Okay. See, you should have finished your sentence before you let me derail you. Anyway, I was going to say, have not seen those movies?
No, I will disown you. I have seen those movies and I do really enjoy them. They're schlocky. They're cheesy. Oh, yeah. They're super fun.
Yeah.
I love Rachel Weisz. Like, it's... they're super fun movies. This was missing a lot of those characteristics. And not that it needs to be like that, because it's not a reboot.
Oh, this was trying to do a lot of different things in a lot of weird different ways. Yeah, but made zero sense.
Brendan Fraser is like so goofy, right? Yeah. Inherently. I mean, even though I do enjoy him, I kind of hate that he's gotten a bad rap throughout the years. But like, I like how cartoony he is. He mm-hmm. does feel like he could have been...
I understand why they cast him in George of the Jungle.
That's exactly what I was going to say. He fits in those perfectly. He feels like a cartoon 1940s serial character. Like he could
have
been...
also cast him as Dudley Do-Right, or am I making that up?
You might be right. You actually might be right. Because he feels like he could have been, if they were going to do a cheesy reboot of Indiana Jones without Harrison Ford, I feel like young Brendan Fraser could have been a good one. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? But those movies I haven't seen in a long time. So when I saw the book, I was like, okay, that's clearly significant. Yeah. But I didn't remember it was from those movies. I was like, oh, that must be something moving forward.
Yeah.
Probably what would have been The Mummy 2.
Oh, that I think it was just a reference.
Okay. Well, that's a bummer because I'm like, well, there you go. Like,
oh, we'll get into all kinds of reasons why.
I know. I feel like we're running in circles. I apologize. But
it's funny. We haven't even started talking about the actual movie yet. No, well, we're still in the trivia.
But I think that this is all important shit to kind of talk about because it sets the scene for
so important
this hot mess that we're about to get into. Jake Johnson's character is listed as Sergeant Vale in the closing credits, but is called Corporal Vale by Morton in a scene where they talk with Greenway, which means who wrote this movie? They were like, what did we call him earlier in the movie? That doesn't matter. Just putting down the credits as something.
It feels like this screenplay sat on a shelf for about 10 or 15 years and they dragged it up and said, yeah, sure. What the hell? 1, let's go with it.
1,000%. This has got Taken vibes all over it. You know how I feel about Taken.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise. Oh, there's a bit. I've got a bit of information about Jake Johnson, who I love Jake Johnson. Don't get me wrong. He's very, very funny. He does not get a lot to do in this. They try to give him.
Is he the buddy?
He's the buddy.
Oh, OK. I've got stuff to say about what they did with him.
Yeah, I think they did him dirty. He's a very charming, funny actor. And I know he has a background in improvisation. I think that he probably, had he been allowed to improv and kind of ad lib a little bit, he probably would have brought a lot more to this, but I don't think he was probably allowed to.
I think they did a lot of improv directing.
Yeah, very true. So when Jake Johnson was offered the part in this movie, he loved the idea and the opportunity to work with Tom Cruise. Understandable. Knowing that Cruise does most of his own stunts, he signed on immediately. But when he read the full script and learned what kind of dangerous actions were expected of him, he admitted to getting cold feet. However, Cruise allowed Johnson to access his private facilities for a rigorous 4.5-month training course, making him well prepared for all the stunts that he was required to do.
I don't know what to feel about Tom Cruise. Like, I don't really care. I don't really watch his movies nowadays. The Scientology thing is what it is.
Fucking weird.
Yeah, it's weird. And that's a whole different issue. But it doesn't seem like he's a jerk off to people. Maybe no, like, out of all the stories you hear, like, he doesn't, you know, spit in people's faces on the street.
No, he doesn't seem like that at all. I think he's
one of those. It's just a lot of the background stuff is kind of weird.
And I think that because Scientology is so fucking weird, and we've learned so much about it as a society as of the past few years from all these documentaries and series, that, and, you know, and everything we've learned about Tom Cruise and his relationship with David Miscavige and this whole thing, you're like, wow, what a fucking goddamn weirdo. But you don't hear anything bad. And now maybe that's all because he's like,
maybe it's hush hush. Maybe it's covered up. You never know.
But maybe he's just a super nice guy. Maybe he just really likes to fucking jump off buildings. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel the same way, where I'm like, I don't have feelings left, right, or center about Tom Cruise. I think that he's an action movie star, and he likes being an action movie star, and he's pretty fucking good at it. So
yeah, the fact that he's doing it in his 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him.
Dude, he looks fucking his face is a whole nother issue. And
there was definitely work done.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing where I'm like,
puffy face syndrome.
He does. He does have real puffy face syndrome. But his body, like, there's the, you know, the scene where he like wakes up in the morgue. And I was like, yo, he's ripped.
Yeah.
He looks great.
He's doing the work.
Well, so speaking of Tom Cruise, he did win a Razzie for worst actor for this movie.
See, I don't think this was any worse than anything else. Like, he's just kind of being Tom Cruise.
I know. I don't know what other, this is for the 2018 Razzies. So.
I mean, I can understand, you know, giving the movie a bad rap, but given what they had to work with, I mean, he did what he does.
I agree. I don't, it almost doesn't feel like, unless there's some background information, that he really influenced the writing. To me, okay, so that was the end of my trivia. We're going to get into the movie. I'll say this off the top. These are the things that I find to be the key issues that pervade the entire movie.
Okay.
One, the writing is true garbage.
Yes.
True garbage. Two, this is clearly written for a man 20 to 25 years younger than Tom Cruise. That actor,
I can see that. Yeah.
Should have been that age. And I'm not ageist in any form, but it was just like, it, like, as I mentioned last week, the beginning of the scene where it sets up that he is a superior officer that's like 20 years younger than him. I'm like, this would literally never happen in the military. This is
right.
The craziest situation. And then some of the weird quippy lines and the jokey shit, I'm like, that's not coming from Tom Cruise. Like, that's not coming from that man. You know, that's coming from a Jake Johnson. That shouldn't be coming from an older man like this. And I don't, because he's not old, but it's just, it felt so strange. I was like, you put, and I don't even know who would be, almost like I want to say,
if you put Chris Pratt in this movie, it would probably work better.
It would have been great.
Or at least more appropriate.
I think it would have been more appropriate. And even if Chris Pratt still had to deliver these shitty, funny lines,
right,
it would have felt more natural than the shit that Tom Cruise was given. And I don't know. Maybe I just haven't seen a newer Tom Cruise movie in a long time, but it just, it felt very foreign, where I was like, dude, what are you doing? Like, it felt like midlife crisis Tom Cruise, where he's like, this is the equivalent of him buying a Ferrari. And like, it just,
the most recent movie I had seen him in, because I've passed over most of his other stuff. Just, I mean, I've heard some of it was good. I heard Edge of Tomorrow was good. Oblivion, I didn't care about. I mean, I think Tropic Thunder was the last thing
that I saw him in. It's an old ass movie.
Yes. And that's the last thing I saw him in that was new at, you know, certainly at the time.
Right.
But in terms of his starring vehicles, I haven't watched any of his.
I know. It's been a very long time.
I mean, Mission Impossible, I dropped off after Mission Impossible 2 was so horrible.
I think we should actually pick that back up, because I hear some of the later ones are really good.
That's kind of what they say about Fast and the Furious, is that they get better as they go along.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I'm kind of like, if we have a spinoff.
Oh, gosh, that'd be a hell of a spinoff. They've made so many of those.
Fast and Furious, there's 9. And how many? Mean,
really, though, let's be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
Are you going to, in the Mission Impossible series?
Yeah.
Not speaking about Fast and Furious, because I am completely negligent. Are you going to get any better than the first one with Brian De Palma and all those guys?
I mean, I'll agree with you, but I will be very honest. I think I've only seen the first two, and there are so many now.
That's the only two I saw.
but I'm saying that I, even though people, I think, agree that like they like the first one, I hear like, what is Ghost Protocol and some of those later ones. People say they're really fucking good. So I'm not going to talk shit just yet.
Oh, no, I'm not talking shit about them. I'm just, And maybe it's nostalgia. Maybe it's internal expectations. Yeah. Maybe because I watched the original Mission Impossible TV series reruns on FX a whole bunch with Peter Graves and all that stuff. So that feel is what I really loved. Which I don't know how much they adhered to in three and beyond, which the third one was actually directed by J.J. Abrams.
Oh, was it? What was that one called? What was the after
Mission
the colon?
Impossible 3.
It was that was all it was called?
I think so.
It wasn't colon J.J. Abrams
Mission
Impossible?
I don't think they started giving it weird subtitles until the fourth one and later.
Okay. Well, I kind of hope that, that pops up because I would be very interested actually in watching those. And the
Man, that'd be a hell of a miniseries though.
It would be a longer miniseries. That would be
It'd be an investment.
That would be an investment. Well, either
That's
way.
That's okay.
Either way. So those were my big issues off the top before we get into this. This should have been a younger man that played the main character. And that's no slight against Tom Cruise. It's just the way it's written. It should have been a younger man. I think it made sense for the jokes and some of the situations in it.
Yes.
Personally. Also, the writing is just true garbage.
Yeah, I think that's the number one issue. There's so much wrong with this script.
And not even in a fun way. Like, it's not a fun, weird Congo thing. It's not a like a silly thing where there are fucking diamonds on the ground that you pick up and shoot lasers into the sky. There's no Tim Curry. It's not as fun bad as that. Cause I was like, well, maybe I'll really enjoy this and it'll be laughable and funny. And
oh, they try to be funny, but it just falls flat on its face.
When we get to it at the very end, Lordy, Lordy, I think I gave myself a headache from rolling my eyes so much. This movie is a PG-13 movie.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of scary for a PG-13 movie. I mean,
scary.
Well, I mean, like it just there's a lot of gross mummy, dead, zombified people type of thing. And maybe I just am not super familiar between line between 2013 and
the mummies. Like, I honestly have a problem calling this movie The Mummy because it's not really a mummy.
And it's not about her either. It feels like it's very little about her. It feels like it's more about Tom Cruise.
Right. And even then, and we can get into it as we, because they slap you on the front with exposition, which is unneeded because they do it again about halfway through the movie.
Okay, that's in all of my notes. All they do is they go, hey, do you remember this thing? Oh, you don't? Hold on. Let me walk you through it beat for beat. Remember that scene that we just watched? Would you like me to explain it to you beat for beat?
Stupid audience member.
I will do that.
Here it is, Jane Winebox. Let me lay it out for you.
Happens over and fucking over and over again. I was like, truly, how stupid do they think we are?
Yeah.
It treats its audience like we are a bunch of dumb dummies. And I understand this is like a big budget action movie. It doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
Doesn't have to be that way. You don't need all this exposition.
Right.
Ideas.
All right. So let's hop into the actual events of the film.
Yeah, let's do it.
We start off with an exposition dump, as these things are often wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
They give the backstory of your mummy, quote unquote, named Amunet. She is an Egyptian princess.
Yep.
She's poised to take over the kingdom, you know, when her dad dies, all this stuff.
Yep.
But dad gets together with another woman and has a son. So she realizes she's out of the picture
as soon
as that kid gets of age.
Yep.
So she makes a deal with Set, the Egyptian god of death.
Yep.
To apparently get power, whatever that means, because it's really nebulous and
it is
very situational.
Yep.
And I guess in exchange, Set wants to become part of the mortal world, which they never explain why.
Nope.
It's just told and that's what you do. So she kills her dad, kills her mom,
kills
her baby brother.
Yeah.
And then I guess she's got to have a sex ceremony with a chosen one, quote unquote.
Yeah, poor dude, that poor schmo.
Yeah. Well, I think he knew what he was getting into, but they frame it that way anyway.
Yeah.
So she has to stab him with this special dagger. It's a dagger with a special jewel on the end.
Correct.
They never say anything about what the dagger is or why they need it, but it's there and they need it. So she's getting ready to, I guess, stab him, which will somehow put Set into his body.
Right.
And she gets stopped at the last second, a couple blow darts in the neck, which is an unintentionally hilarious shot because they made it to be this big twist and it just looks goofy. It's like Ace Ventura when he's shot in When Nature Calls. So
I have a question moving forward about this and we can discuss it
because it's a recurring theme.
It's a recurring theme. But also I'm a little confused about what takes down the mummy, Amunet. What takes her down? Because sometimes she seems truly invincible and like magical and she can do all these things. And then sometimes it's like, oh, I just got pulled, like a rope got through me. And so now I'm here and I'm like, wait a second, fucking, it seems inconsistent.
It is. It's horribly inconsistent. They don't define what her power set is. She's not really a mummy. She's really kind of possessed.
She is possessed and she's kind of like the undead. A mummy is like a dead human that's come back to life.
Right.
She's possessed by Set. He's given her.
I see. Yeah.
It is unclear.
Power, quote unquote.
He's given her power. So in the ceremony where you see in the flashback.
And there's lots of crows. They make sure to show you lots of crows.
Lots of crows.
Which is important for later.
Yeah. So
at least from a visual perspective.
Right. And you see she calls forth Set. You see this kind of dark skeleton figure, not even very clearly, come up from behind her and hand her this dagger.
Yes.
Again, you don't know any of the mythology behind the dagger. You right. don't know what it is. You just know it came from Set himself. And that's the thing that she must use to strike a mortal being. And therefore that mortal being will be shared with Set.
Oh, good. Thank you for providing it. Cause I had forgotten that he had provided her with the dagger.
Yeah, but it still doesn't give, I mean, we only know it's magical because it came from him. There's right. no reason that we should know anything about the stone and the dagger, because what eventually happens is that the dagger is separated from the stone that sits on the top of the hilt.
Right.
Those are separated. And actually in the very first flashback, we see that there are these Knights Templar during the Second Crusades have pilfered some of these things.
Because that's what I think of when I think of a mummy movie are the Knights Templar.
Knights Templar, I know. I was like, gosh. Guys, you are spanning space and time. It is now very confusing, but.
No one cares about the Da Vinci Code anymore.
I know. That was my thought. And I was like, you know what? The Da Vinci Code was a more entertaining movie than this. And I say that loosely, having not seen it in a very long time.
It was a boring movie.
It was. So anyway, what we find is that we've got the history of Amunet. She is essentially buried alive. That is her punishment. And what we know is that this all goes down in Egypt, her homeland. We know that the men that have captured her and enslaved her are taking her far away into the desert. And then they essentially bury her with all of these other booby traps, essentially.
Yes.
So when we get to present day.
Well, here, let's step back 1 second on this whole exposition dump flashback.
Yeah, there's a shitload
thing.
Of exposition.
There's a lot of it.
It's all over the place because we hear Russell Crowe's VO. Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. It's Russell Crowe's VO. And I like Russell Crowe. He is very good.
Sure.
He is terrible in this and he is not a good deliverer of this type of exposition. I'm going to compare this movie to the Brendan Fraser Mummy a lot.
Uh-huh.
And when you watch that, it starts with a very similar sequence. It's, you know, them giving the history of the mummy and how he became the mummy and all this stuff. But it's delivered by Oded Fehr,
yeah.
who is a far better deliverer sure. of this type of exposition.
Sure.
He is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I want him to do more stuff.
Agreed.
My wife has a crush on him and so do I.
Yeah. Big fan in the Robards household.
Yes. We love Oded Fehr. You know, we should like call, you know, get in touch with him on Cameo and have him give us some sort of message.
I think
so. You know. If he does that,
if you'd be not, like, make sure to rate, review, him. And follow Storage Room Movie Boom.
Exactly. Oded Fehr, would you mind to give us a message? You know what? We should do that.
Actually, we should. Side note,
you're paying him money to give a message. Why the fuck not?
Why the fuck not? But yes, Russell Crowe comes in with a VO, which struck me as interesting, where I go, okay, is Russell Crowe the main character?
Right.
He's our narrator. Now, here's look. Having gone through the whole movie, because we do get some Russell Crowe VO later.
Do we?
I thought
oh,
so.
Oh, yeah. Basically over the end, which is a fucking weird mess.
Yeah.
He basically delivers the final kind of a monologue almost.
It is. It's super weird. But so we get his VO at the top. We get it at the end. And so the only reason why I could kind of rationalize that even being in there is simply because I'm like, okay, maybe Dr. Jekyll is our key figure that ties together all of these future movies. He's the narrator of the whole story.
He's the Nick Fury of the
exactly.
Dark Universe.
That's all I could imagine. I was like, otherwise it makes no damn sense why he, a person that is in this movie for perhaps 12 minutes, why is he?
Gosh, was it only 12 minutes? It felt
oh,
like
I
so
don't
much
actually
longer.
Know Sam. I have no idea. But he's not in it for like the first hour plus.
That's true. That's true.
He's shown a little bit at the beginning because as we see, so as we mentioned, our Knights Templar, one of the knights is buried with the red stone that had been pilfered from Egypt, right? So he's buried. And then we see modern day London and they're digging a big commuter rail and they come across a Templar temple underground. And while they're, you know, we see all sorts of news footage and it's there and then some of it's underwater, which is so stupid because it comes back later. But like, you know, they're kind of setting the scene for like, hey, guys, there might be a fight scene that happens here later.
Right.
Then we see Russell Crowe comes in and his group of henchmen edge out all of the cops and other people that are there.
Yeah. Russell Crowe comes in spouting cliches and, you know, we're taking over and blah, blah, blah. And things that are in the past should stay hidden and all this.
Rocking that butt cut, by the way, that hair. Woof. Woof. Sir, don't agree with it one bit.
I don't really pay attention, but or at least I don't recall. Maybe at this point I was already in a delirium wondering what the hell I was looking at.
You're like, how dare you?
I mean, let me just put this into perspective. For the last several movies that we've reviewed, I've had probably about 4 or 5 pages of notes.
Yeah.
I don't even have 2 on this. My brain failed to comprehend what it was looking at, and I just completely was unable to take as comprehensive notes as I would like.
So my notes, I actually do have, I've got 4 or 5 pages, but the thing is they started to just be bullet points of like, we're here, we're there. What is this? What
see,
is this
I feel like on? I should have done more of that if only to contextualize for myself later.
Because like there is quite a bit of jumping around. It's
anyway,
it's just so fucking sucks. Okay,
so yeah, Russell Crowe comes in spouting cliches. They take over this site from the British, you know, commuter service, whatever. We'll call them British.
Yeah, the MTA.
Is that what they are? Yeah, okay, sure. We'll call them British MARTA.
Yeah.
That's the Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority.
Exactly. Right,
for those public transit. Anyway,
yes.
I keep forgetting that, you know, not everyone that listens to us is from Atlanta.
That's
so,
correct.
Spoiler warning for we're from Atlanta.
So also, the statistics would show that most of our downloads are from Atlanta.
Then spoiler warning, you probably already know that.
Oh, we have 1 download in Asia.
Nice. Good
Very
for you,
exciting.
Person. I hope you're listening to this episode.
But they've only downloaded 1, so unfortunately. Well, they probably then, were like, wah, wah. Poor
okay.
American fools.
So, snap. We're in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Modern
day Iraq.
This movie was written in 2006.
Yep. Yep.
So terrorists are defacing historical monuments, which my wife told me is actually a phenomenon that occurs. So this was not just random stuff.
Right.
Tom Cruise and his buddy. That's the one you were talking about earlier.
Jake Johnson. I will henceforth refer to him as JJ.
All right. JJ. Because I did not remember his character name. I didn't remember anybody's character names.
Did you ever see New Girl?
No.
Hmm. So
the one with Zoe
Deschanel and her eyeballs. It's actually the first couple seasons are quite funny. It gets a little off the rails later seasons, but like Jake Johnson is one of her roommates in it. He's very good. He's very funny. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, anyway, so I guess, and this is one of the things that maybe I wasn't paying as much attention.
Yeah.
I have no idea what Tom Cruise and this guy even do. Like, are they military and they were going AWOL to try and steal stuff? Or what the hell?
So it's very, while they do talk a lot and it feels like they're giving you a lot of exposition, it is completely jumbled. I'm with you. I went back and kind of watched a couple of scenes over again. So this is what I can parse from what we're given.
Well, I'm glad it's not just me.
They are military, which makes clearly no sense, but they are military. They were given the task of going and providing reconnaissance and just observation of these insurgents that are defacing this abandoned town, because they do make a point to say all the civilians are gone.
Right.
So this is
very much the post Man of Steel.
Exactly.
We need to say everyone's gone or else people will get mad at us.
Totally. So they make a point to say all the civilians are gone. It's just full of insurgents, this little town in the middle of nowhere. They're defacing monuments and they're standing on a hill. And it seems that their original intent as military officers of some sort of allegiance, we're not sure. I assume it's the American military, but it still seems a little amorphous.
Yeah.
That is their only job, is to just provide reconnaissance, look down from, you know, 100, 200 yards away, give them let them know what's going on, the boss man.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cruise is like, yo, we got to get down there. And so he talks JJ into going down there. So what we kind of learn throughout the next sort of action sequence and all this stuff is that while they're on their what I would assume their regular military missions, they've been pilfering and stealing artifacts from all across the Middle East.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing about this action sequence, did you feel a dollar store Michael Bay vibe from this whole sequence?
I mean, yeah. And generally the Michael Bay sense. Yes, I get it.
Just for this one sequence, just with the Middle Eastern setting and the kind of sassy sidekick who doesn't want to be there.
They gave him that garbage fucking move where it's during a battle where there are bullets flying that he's yelling quippy quips.
Yeah.
Like, I fucking hate you, you son of a bitch. And like, if we get out of this, I'm going to hurt you. Or, you know, like whatever ridiculous garbage while they're running around. It's all obviously 80 yard. Like, it's just.
Yeah. And it's shot at sundown, which is a classic Michael Bay. Classic. Cinematography, yeah. Move, just a lot of the action. Just this one sequence alone was major Michael Bay energy.
Oh, for sure.
Except
for
nowhere
sure.
near as capable as Michael Bay. And as weird as that is to say,
yeah.
He knows what he's good at and he does it.
Hey, Michael Bay. I mean, he hasn't appeared on this podcast yet. I'm sure he will.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
He knows how to make a Michael Bay movie.
That's true.
He sure does. But what we also learn from this first stupid modern day sequence is that they're in the military, but they also love to go pilfer things and steal antiquities and sell them on the black market to make, I assume, that's their fucking side hustle. The two of these guys together, Tom right. Cruise and JJ. But we also see Tom Cruise open up a map, and there's a note attached to it that says, like, look for Haram from Henry. XOXO Henry. We learn later in the movie that this letter and this map have been stolen from blonde girl from Peaky Blinders. If you've ever seen Peaky Blinders.
I did not watch Peaky Blinders.
Oh, you should actually. I'm trying to get dad to watch it. I think he would really, really like it.
Is that the one with, hold on, don't tell me. I see his face.
Yeah, he's beautiful. He's got a real femme face.
Is it Cillian Murphy?
It is. Correct.
Okay, nailed it.
He's the main character.
Mm-hmm. Ding noise.
But so blonde woman in this, and I only call her that because, as you mentioned, she truly has no other characteristics besides to just be a blonde woman that is somewhat of an archaeologist.
She is a one night stand that they make into a way bigger deal than she should be.
For fucking sure. So she has a map that we later learn is from Dr. Jekyll.
Yes.
He's like, yo, I think there might be this mummy that I'm kind of interested in this area. So Tom Cruise has a one night stand with her. There's a whole stupid schlocky bit about, like, you know, about how long they had sex and like shit like that.
That was so random.
That's what I'm saying is like, it felt like it was a very forced jokey thing. It wasn't funny. And also Tom Cruise can't deliver that. He's not that sort of funny dude.
Right.
I think there are moments when he can be funny. He's not a quippy dude like that. Again, like you said, put Chris Pratt in there. Chris Pratt is delivering those lines in a great way.
Yeah.
It was a bummer.
Also, let's be perfectly honest, not to be ageist, but Tom Cruise could probably be her dad.
Okay. So that was something. And so spoiler alert, when I did write the pitches this week, because this is my week to pitch to you.
Yes.
That was going to be my theme was a May December romance and all of these ridiculous movies where, you know, one person is significantly older than the next, but that's Tom Cruise's thing, right? They keep putting him in movies.
That's true.
With women that are 20 plus years younger than him. And these women are fawning all over him.
That's the Katie Holmes thing, right?
I guess. I mean, that was whole arranged by Scientology, but,
really?
I have a very significant feeling about that. But anyways,
you heard it here first. Breaking news.
I don't think that's breaking news. I think everybody kind of thinks that. So that is agreed. Like, she's way too young. He's again way too old for this fucking part.
Yes.
And it is super weird because there are two women in this movie.
Yeah.
One is blonde woman who has no other characteristics besides somehow feeling, you know, Karen Allen anger/love for the main character, that sort of vibe. You know, that you get from Indiana Jones.
Yep.
But then you also get the mummy, who is also what we will learn has chosen Tom Cruise as her chosen, who also is a very young woman and even younger woman.
Yeah.
And it's just there's nothing super explicit. It's just super weird. And like, it just feels very unrealistic. I'm not saying that those romances can't develop in real life.
Right. I mean, like, look at Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart. They're like decades apart and they've been married for 20 years.
Well, they have. You know. Exactly. And that shit can happen. Don't get me wrong. But it's just so typical. And
true. I agree.
You know, I mean, I
he was wrong for this movie and they probably put him in it to try and sell more tickets.
I guess they did. But I'm like, yo, put a younger man in this. And I think even though it's bad, I think they could have
made more money. Certainly.
Yeah. Get a hot young actor at that time. So this is 2017. So yeah, maybe it is a Chris Pratt or maybe it's one of the Hemsworth or something like that. Cause the Hemsworth,
you could have gotten Liam Hemsworth to do this movie. What else was he doing?
He was literally doing nothing. And also I think the Hemsworth can be funny. I think I mean, I don't think they're generally known to be funny, but I think that
I don't know. Chris at this point, I think is better at comedy than anything
else.
He
is very funny. I think he would have been too big a star for this, which sounds crazy.
That's why I said Liam. Get the younger one.
Get Liam in there. I think Liam would have been great. He's good looking. He's younger. I think he can play for comedy. It just would have made all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
All the relationships aside, I still think the writing was geared toward a younger man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
armchair casting directors, we are.
We should actually, I feel like we should maybe make that a new segment for the show.
Patreon exclusive episode. Armchair casting directors.
So while they have this battle, this Michael Bay battle in the town, they call in an airstrike. JJ calls in an airstrike. They're saved at the last minute. But this airstrike also causes a basically a what do you call it?
Cave in
for that. Or no, what do you call it? Sinkhole. Basic, kind of like a sinkhole happen in the sand. And we are exposed and we see the face of this monument where we know that Amonet has been buried.
Yeah, clearly Egyptian face.
Exactly. So that's when Courtney B. Vance comes in, completely underserved in this movie.
I agree. He was robbed.
He was robbed. He's a great fucking actor.
He is.
They brought him in for 7 lines.
Yeah.
Tops. And I mentioned it last week and I'll stop harping on the age thing. But like, while we see Tom Cruise saying to Courtney B. Vance, I'm sorry, sir, you know, like clearly referring to him as a superior officer. And I was like, fucking Tom Cruise, you are 20 years older than Courtney B. Vance. And also like your hair is so long. You are not military at all. Like, and we know we've talked about this. Our dad is lifetime military man, lifetime army man.
Oh yeah.
We were made to watch many of an army movie. And so dad always gripes and complains about how it's not like the real army. And I always found that frustrating, but there are some things that are truly ridiculous.
Yes.
We're like, this is utterly ridiculous.
This is absolutely ridiculous because I guess for some reason he says, okay, girl, you can go in the hole.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise and, you know, JJ, despite the fact that I just said that you steal everything that you come across, you go with her. Why does he do that?
So Courtney B. Vance gives us the whole breakdown of like, you guys steal shit. And I'm like, what the fucking
Why
fuck?
Have these guys not been court-martialed if they are military?
Why
and
are you
stealing
cool with
stuff?
This? It's so whatever. All logistics aside, they get in the fucking hole. So they go down. They see the one thing that I did enjoy about this scene, because I should have said this off at the top. I like this type of movie, as in I love a historical action antiquities type of like action adventure. So I love the old mummy movies. I will fully admit to enjoying the nonsensical craziness of National Treasure. I will totally get that.
Yeah, no, I get it. It's very much filling the void that Indiana Jones left.
Yeah, I love a treasure hunt. You know, I love like mixing in like historical mysteries with it. I think it's great. And I love an action adventure. All of those features are here. So when they go down into the cave and there's the they notice that there's mercury dripping from the ceiling down into a canal that leads down to a pond. I was like, that's kind of cool.
That's an interesting aspect.
And it's also visually, mercury is a very cool visual aspect, right? It's an interesting, cool thing to come across because it seems foreign anyway. It seems alien.
Well, because it's liquid at room temperature. And so that's weird.
Exactly. It's weird. It reflects very nicely. It's a liquid metal. It visually, it creates an interesting aspect to what we're looking at here. And so, of course, per fucking usual, blonde face is down there and she's talking to her recorder about what she's seeing. And so therefore she's walking us through what we're seeing. And it's quite obvious.
And maybe I was not paying attention again because, you know, this movie had already lost me at this point. did she have a camera? Was she using her cell phone? Like, they made it look like, as a few parts, like she was recording something, but I didn't remember seeing her with recording equipment.
She says something about pull everything out of the bags.
But they never show us what that is, to my knowledge.
No, and then, but then you see a weird like shot where it looks like it's through like a camera looking right at her. And I'm like, so did they set up a camera?
Because, but then neither JJ nor Tom are working the camera.
Exactly. I know. It literally makes no sense. Because at first she was like, hit the lights. And I'm like, oh, so like, were there lights in the bags? Like,
right. So if you want to talk about directing faux pas and the you know, necessity for a good grasp of visual language, this entire sequence is it. If you don't show the audience what they're pulling out or what type of equipment, it's going to leave everybody confused.
Well, it does. And it feels.
And I wasn't even drinking when I was watching this movie. I'm drinking now, but actually, that's different.
I actually wasn't either. I was dead sober.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she does say that it looks like there's some sort of camera being operated, but we don't really see it. We don't see anyone seeing it. We don't see that it's set up, but she's walking through it the way that we've seen in a million other of these movies where she's kind of describing what she's seeing. So she's describing how there is a rope that is made of all these symbols that has all these symbols on it that is partitioning off this pond of mercury. And around the pond of mercury, we see these sculptures of Set that are staring inward, not outward. So they're clearly looking at something within. And you see that there are ropes that are coming out from the mercury to the ceiling. And later we see that they are attached to weights.
Yes.
So anyway, in the meantime, JJ is pilfering some gold and jewels off of like skeletons. And so is Tom Cruise.
Yep.
And then Tom Cruise does a stupid thing where blonde girl goes, it's quite clear that these ropes are meant to hold someone down, not pull them up, like, or something to that effect.
Right.
She's like, this isn't a tomb. This is a prison.
Right.
She says that line. And then she's kind of like, oh, I wonder what it is. Or she wonders out loud or something like that. And Tom Cruise, like in a, what would be a young man hotshot move, just pulls out his gun and goes, all right. And so then shoots the rope that hoists up the sarcophagus. So
before this, they get a call over the radio from Courtney B. Vance saying, oh, hey, we've got hostiles incoming. You guys got to be out of there in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I don't want to do that. I've come too far. Right. You know, you're a stereotypical researcher that gets in over their head and all this stuff. And then, Tom Cruise does that, shoots it. The sarcophagus raises above the wall of liquid mercury.
Yep.
And then we get taken to a perfume commercial.
It 1,000% is. Thank
it's
you,
possession
Samwise.
By Calvin Klein.
Possession by Calvin Klein.
Exactly. So it's like these weird mystery shots in the desert of Mummy Girl when she was young with lots of flowing drapes behind, well, not drapes, but, you know, flowing garments behind her. And just like these shots of her kind of getting kinky with Tom Cruise.
Yes.
And
Silk Organza.
Yeah. It's just, it's
makeup. Yeah. It's a whole lot of that look. Thank
it's
you.
It's a whole sequence. So I guess she just, so I'm going to pull a comparison here to the Brendan Fraser mummy. If you don't remember, they find the corpse of the mummy. Mm-hmm. They find a sarcophagus. They open it. He's just like a gooey, you know, icky mummy just sitting in a sarcophagus. It does not reanimate until they read from the Book of the Dead, which brings him back to life.
It's a ritual. Yeah.
In this, all they have to do is raise her above this liquid and bam, she's back and influencing Tom Cruise.
Yeah. And so my other question was, first off, she's presumably, like we said, she's possessed and for all intents and purposes, alive, I guess, like cognizant while she's in this coffin. But all he does is shoot a fucking rope. And so I'm like, is it because he shot the rope that pulled her up? Or is it because he's the first person that is facing the front of the sarcophagus? I'm like, why is he the one that is identified as being her chosen? Why is he the one that is given the focus in this?
Exactly. They don't give you any reason visually or through, you know, exposition as to why he was chosen.
Mm-mm.
Because, I mean, there was three people in the room. She could have chosen any one of them. And I guess is mercury the substance that disrupts her ability to influence people?
Well, they did say, and like, I mean, it's kind of a loosey goosey thing, but when they first walk in and they notice the mercury dripping from the ceiling, blonde woman says, the ancients used to believe that it would lessen the power of evil. So it's meant to be a dampener on evil forces, but that still doesn't explain why she identifies Tom Cruise as anyone special.
The thing is, when you look at a lot of these ancient mythological structures, ancient Egyptian gods, ancient Greek, ancient Roman, which is basically just ancient Greek with new names.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The god of death is not treated as evil. It is just treated as there. It is just a part of the cycle.
Right.
So Set is not, at least in the traditional sense, evil.
No.
It's not like he's a supervillain out trying to take over the world. He is there to, you know, like Davy Jones in our Pirates of the Caribbean, there to ferry the dead and, you know, kind of harvest souls and do all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense by that metric.
No, they've set him up to be an evil character, the devil. It is the equivalent of the Christian devil, essentially, in this, where it's like she sold her soul to the devil for something. Like, I'm like, by the way. So when Amunet in our flashback, the original, like, you know, the original sin of her life, her killing her father and her stepmother and the baby, I'm like, she didn't need that super dagger to do that. Yo, she could have just done that because she snuck into their room at night.
Exactly.
What is she getting out of this? You know?
Yeah. Because even then, when she does show superpowers, it's wildly inconsistent.
Wildly.
And never even remotely defined.
No, it's truly all over the place. And like some of her powers that we see, you're kind of like scene to scene, seeing more of them. Like, as we will see, she can like kind of soul suck from people, right? She like absorbs
and when you look at the Brendan Fraser movie,
but it made more sense in that movie
because there was a reason behind it.
Right.
There was a mummy's curse. And in this one, she just does it to get a power up.
She does it. Yeah, she does. She gets a one up and then she's gained a zombie. So anyway, whatever. So they get this fucking sarcophagus out, right? And so they pull it out. Everybody's on helicopters. They fly back.
Which you'll notice that, you know, they say, oh, the bogeys are inbound in 10 minutes. And then nobody ever shows up.
Nobody ever fucking shows up.
Why did you need that line of dialogue?
It was truly stupid. Like, just like that happens and then they get out.
It's like Chekhov's gun just sits in the holster.
Yeah, for sure. They're like, just keep it there.
It's fine. We'll say this, but we will never come back to it.
So they get to a very quick army airbase. There's a sandstorm that is coming at them. So they very quickly load the sarcophagus onto a cargo plane with blonde girl, JJ, and Tom Cruise and Courtney B. Vance.
And like two other randos.
Two other rando guys.
Which there were a lot more people at this airbase, and yet not even half of them made it on the plane. Did they just sit there and get hit by the sandstorm?
They didn't like turn your fucking plane on and then maybe you beat the sandstorm. I was like,
They make it seem like this big dramatic moment, but they don't lead up to it all like it is a dramatic moment.
No, not at all. It's like they don't say,
oh crap, we've got to get out of here before the sandstorm hits.
Exactly.
Instead, it's just, you see the sandstorm and you see the people and they're just calmly loading up the plane.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it a big deal or is it not? Because when they take off and the sandstorm somewhat hits the plane, they play this big, overly dramatic musical score when the plane flies out of the sandstorm.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like they want it to be a threat, but we're not really given other clues that it is a threat.
Again, first time director. And that's what a lot of this reeks of. And not even a competent first time director. This is just a guy that was like, yeah, sure. What the hell?
He's like, I got some free time. I'll do it.
Yeah, why not?
So in the meantime, JJ in the cave had been bitten by these spiders. Again, a stupid thing.
A totally random thing. The spiders show up as soon as they raise the sarcophagus. There's all of a sudden camel spiders all over the place. Yeah. They bite JJ and then they all leave.
And that's it.
And they're like, what?
Well, but the thing is, it's only kind of, if you remember that later in the movie, when you see the mummy, our dead girl, doing things, she does control other masses of animals. Like, she controls a big group of rats at one point, and then she controls the birds. But
the difference being between the crows, which you see when they raise the sarcophagus out of this thing.
Yep.
And there's a big herd or a flock of a murder of crows.
Ooh, I met it.
Later on, they show the crows explicitly in the first Set scene where she makes the deal. There's tons of crows hanging from the ceiling. They don't show you bugs or spiders or rats. Yeah. So why is she able to control these things?
Yeah, that's it. Where it's like, so is she just controlling large groups of animals or like?
I understand the crow connection. Yeah, they show that. That is one thing that they do competently. They show you that crows were here. So therefore she can do things with them later on.
Exactly. Yeah. So the spider thing seems off the wall.
Yeah.
And all you see is that JJ gets bit and then he becomes possessed.
Immediately. And no one, like, he looks like a zombie when the second they put him on the plane and no one says, oh, dude, maybe we should like,
hey, man, I can see all of your veins on the outside of your body. No one fucking says anything.
And he's like pale gray. Oof. And no one notices this or says anything.
They don't give a shit. They don't give two shits.
Whatever, dude, we'll get the plane in the air. So I'm paid on commission.
Yeah, they get this stupid cargo plane in the air with this stupid sarcophagus. You see that JJ, in his possessed state, goes over and starts fucking with the sarcophagus.
Well, you see his eyeballs roll in the back of his head case it wasn't obvious enough that he was possessed by something.
You were told you're hit over the head with the fact that he's now not under his own control.
Yeah.
He's fucking with the sarcophagus. Courtney B. Vance goes, yo, man, what are you doing? So he stabs him twice in like the most funny kind of like stabby, like zombie way.
Right. Just like.
Yeah. Where he's just like.
Like no effort.
Sleepwalking. Just, kind there of you go. Zabby. Zabby.
Zabby, zabby.
Stabby move. And it's played for laughs when he starts coming toward Tom Cruise and Blonde Girl and then the other two army dudes that are in the plane.
That apparently just like weren't paying any attention during the rest of this sequence.
Not doing their jobs. And so they're like, shoot him. Then like, don't shoot him. And then they shoot him and then nothing happens. And they shoot him again and nothing happens. And then he finally falls down and then Tom Cruise accidentally shoots him again. And it's played for fucking laughs. And I'm like, Tom Cruise isn't funny. He cannot do this.
Also, if Tom Cruise is military, why is he hesitant to hold a handgun, which he's holding gangsta style, by the way? He's holding this sumbitch sideways.
Super awkward.
And he's holding it up kind of by his head like he's recoiling from the fact that he's having to do this.
Yeah.
Just this movie makes no sense.
No,
it makes
fucking
no daggum sense.
No goddamn sense. So they shoot JJ and then
he's dead.
JJ's dead for all intents and purposes. That's when all of a sudden the plane goes wonky. Oh no. So they run to the cockpit because that's allowed to be opened.
You know what? I don't know about military craft. Whatever. Out of all the crap that's happening here, that's one thing that I just glossed over.
So they run in there and they're like, what's going on? And they're like, we don't know. We're over British airspace. They did make sure to say something about that.
Oh, see, I didn't even remember that.
Oh, I heard that because I go,
that must have been a hell of a fast flight to go from, you know, Iraq to, you know, Britain in what looked to be about 20 minutes.
Yeah. If that long. So we see in the distance a bunch of fucking birds, a murder of crows. And then they shoot. I wrote down literal bird strike. And they just like plummet.
Oh, yeah. This is Hitchcock style.
It is.
You know, action going on right
projectile
now.
Projectile crows come in through the cockpit and the plane starts to go down and it goes down and it's fucking losing wings and losing engines and like all this melee, all this mayhem is happening.
Yes.
And so they're flying around, they're doing the like zero gravity thing because they're plummeting toward Earth. And Tom Cruise is there trying to take care of and be chivalrous and take care of Blonde Girl. So he gets her in a parachute, pulls her chute. She shoots out. You think he's going to grab one as well, but he doesn't. And just then you hit the ground and before you hit the ground, you see white flash.
Yep.
Cut to white. And then you see Blonde Girl in the hospital and they go, hey, you have to ID the bodies.
Yep.
You go in to the morgue where she's going to ID the bodies. And all of a sudden, Tom Cruise like pops up in a body bag.
Yeah.
Naked. Looking great. Looking great.
Not a scratch on him, by the way.
Not a goddamn scratch on him. Looking great. And he's obviously confused. Blonde Girl and doctors come in and they're like, what? He has a small interaction with JJ, who's definitely dead, but is now either a figment of his imagination.
So.
Yeah, I know. I can see where you're going.
Do you know the reference I'm going to make here?
Go ahead.
This is mad American Werewolf in London vibes.
Yeah, for sure.
Which the funny thing is, when we opened up Amazon, I watched it through Amazon Prime.
Yeah, same.
And one of the movies that popped up was American Werewolf in London. Yeah. And I'm like, oh,
or
well,
not Paris, London.
No, Paris was horrible.
Paris was terrible. I apologize.
Yeah, you should. let's pitch it. No.
It might be a bad good. I haven't seen it in a while.
I haven't either. So yeah, I saw that. I said, oh, that movie's great, but you didn't like, because I was watching this with my wife and I was like, "Hey, you didn't like that one, but I love it." Anyway. So it was just coincidental that this is trying to do the exact same thing. Yep. The buddy, the dead buddy that you can see that makes sarcastic, quippy comments to you while you think you're going crazy. It's just, oh my gosh, this movie is a hodgepodge of about seven other different movies.
It is.
And that's one of them.
And truly,
it's like a Michael Bay movie, American Werewolf in London. And we'll add more to the list as we go on.
Yeah. And like they,
I guess the Mummy.
Also, so in this scene, there's like a whole lot of like catching up with JJ and nothing being said. There's truly no exposition. He's just like, yeah, man, you're cursed. Like that, like really, it could have been that short and then done.
Yeah.
So we learned that, hey, both of you're cursed. That's why you're getting visions. That's why you're seeing me. We're both cursed. Like, sorry, but again, that's just the way it fucking goes.
Why is he cursed? Like, it would have made sense if he had taken an item or if he had gotten scarred or hit with some sort of MacGuffin
something would have interjected with him. If he had touched the mummy or something like that.
Maybe some of that evil mercury got off. I don't know. Like something. Any it's just like, I looked at this thing and that might be the reason why this happened.
Exactly. So not only that, but in the same scene, because they're in a bar and blonde woman is baffled as to why he's alive and we are as well. But she then starts to tell the story again of the Princess Amonet. Right. And we're like, yeah, we already saw this.
Yeah, there was no need.
Just
cut out the beginning exposition and just have her dump it here. And then you can show flashbacks of the stuff that you filmed for
1,000%. So she gives
this is only about 40 minutes into the movie.
Exactly. It's crazy. So I was like, am I nuts? Why is she talking about this again?
Yeah.
Like, so she gives him the download that all the viewers have already gotten.
Right.
So we're all smarter than Tom Cruise at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, he runs outside. He has another vision. It's a thing. He's had a couple of visions through this thing. There's a very shitty exchange between the two of them in the middle of London where he's like, how would I know this if I wasn't possessed? And like, basically, he's proving to her that he's been not possessed, but like he has the visions, his knowledge that he wouldn't otherwise have. And it's truly stupid. It's so, so stupid. It hurts my brain.
Yeah, how bad it is. It's really bad. And like he gets attacked by a horde of rats, which you think he does, but he doesn't because it's a vision. And again, the visions are used twice to my knowledge in this movie. This is one of them.
Yeah.
And the other is later on in the church.
Yeah. In the church. But then she. So what I believe.
But yeah, I wrote a note. There are so many random transitions in this movie that it's hard to keep track. And that's true.
I thought you were putting your paper down like, and my notes end here.
No. That's I'm over halfway done, though, with my notes. And I feel like we haven't even gotten halfway through this movie.
No. So I will say that quick little scene. We do see two EMTs show up to the crash site of the airplane.
Yes.
And this is where we see that the mummy is alive for all intents and purposes. She's there. She's been knocked out of her sarcophagus. And this is where you see that she has the power to soul suck and energy suck out of people and makes zombies.
Yeah. She dehydrates them intensely.
Exactly. So
through kissing, apparently, because that's how she does it. Because she's a woman and that's all she has.
Exactly. That's the only power that she can have is sexuality and making out.
Yeah.
So I wrote down. I don't know what scene we're at, but I just wrote down his hair looks ridiculous.
That could have been any scene. I really have no idea.
There's another expo dump about the dagger of Set with the separated stone that we've already seen in a fucking flashback. Again, they're explaining about, and it's truly believed that the Knights Templar may have stolen this and that maybe that's the stone is in England. And it's like,
yeah, if she was looking for the stone, why was she in Iraq?
I know.
Like it's this, just there's it's, so much. Anyway, so Tom Cruise says, okay, I've got to get to the crash site.
Yes.
And she goes with him.
Yep.
And so they get to the crash site and I'm trying to even remember the damn order of operations here.
Well, no, that's about it. They get to the crash site. They start looking around.
Yeah. She tells him to piss off because she's like, the crash site's over here. You're doing whatever the weird shit you're doing.
Yeah, because it's like a couple miles
here.
Away from the crash site. Yeah. And it's in this, the ruins of a church.
Yeah. Well, it's like even outside the church. Yeah. And so they're walking through this area and Tom Cruise stops and girl walks away because she says, screw you. I'm going this way because this is where the actual crash is.
Right.
And he turns towards this church and the mummy's there and he has another weird vision. And all of a sudden he's in the church. And it's like, did you teleport? Or did you just black out?
Was very confusing because you're standing in ruins, but it's clearly a church.
Yeah.
But then, as you say, he has a vision and then all of a sudden he's in a fully formed church that is not in ruins. It is a fully built church. And you're like, oh.
No, it's a totally different building. Like you've got.
I thought it was like a flashback to within those ruins.
No, it was a totally different building. Like,
but then how does she stumble across it? Because blonde girl comes back in and walks in on a very hacky scene.
Oh, yeah. She walks in. Yeah. There's a lot of weird stuff.
But that's what I'm saying. The logistics of it don't make sense. I thought that it was that all of a sudden it was like he was kind of transported in time to this being an active church back in whatever time it would.
Wow. See, I didn't read that at all. Like it looked like to me,
but it still doesn't make sense.
The church here, and then you've got separate building here, which to the people listening to this makes no sense, but this and this.
Yeah.
He's here. He sees her across the distance.
Uh-huh.
He has a vision. Next thing you know, he's inside that church.
Right. But even that church itself, like, would have been in ruins because you see that from the outside.
Okay.
Is what I'm saying. Like, it felt like it was more of like a time and place type of situation rather than just a place type of situation.
So anyway, her zombie goons
come
grab him, throw him on the table.
Yep.
She straddles him because that's the weird sexual stuff that has to happen here.
Of course.
She pulls out, she breaks the statue in front of her and pulls out the knife, which is how coincidental.
Oh, how
did you just happen to crash this plane right where you needed to?
So strange.
It's so curious. So she pulls out this knife and she's going to stab him. Huh, and then stops because she doesn't have the special rock in the end, which doesn't make any sense. What's
the pretty ruby on
the
end.
Yeah, she realizes the pretty is gone, and so she doesn't stab him. And then Blondie somehow realizes he's here and walks in. And it's treated like that one scene in Iron Man.
It's a comedy bit.
If you remember, after Iron Man in the second act goes to the Middle East and beats up all those guys and comes back, and he's trying to get the armor off in the garage, basically. And Gwyneth Paltrow, Pepper Potts, walks in and he's fighting with the machine to get the armor off. That's what this is treated as.
Yeah.
So, like, everybody pauses and they all look at her. And she just got this dumbfounded look on her face, like,
It's a wide shot because you see the henchmen, you see Tom Cruise, and you see the mummy all hard look toward the camera. Mm-hmm. See the reverse of blonde girl going, and then cuts back to the wide shot of this vignette on the altar. And then Tom Cruise just goes, Jenny, run.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no.
Yeah, come on. It hurts.
Come the fuck on. Like,
so now we have the chase scene. So him and Jenny somehow, like, there's this stupid hand to hand fight scene between him and these mummies, I'm going to say mummies, but they're really treated more like PG-13 zombies.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of their look, their behavior, how they dismember them.
Yep.
It's just zombies with no blood.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you can argue whether or not a zombie is a mummy is a zombie, whatever. We're not going to have that type of nerdy dissection here.
Yeah, no, we didn't.
Stay tuned for our Patreon exclusive episode, Zombies or Zombies. That joke needs to be excised. So let me continue. So Jenny and Tom get in the car and they drive away. And she's saying, oh, you're cursed. She's in your head. She's doing all this stuff to you. And he's like, that's bullshit. That's whatever. And then it turns out after he makes like a half a dozen turns that he pulls right back up to the church. And he's like, okay, she's in my head. So if that's the case, why don't you let the girl drive?
Because she's a silly girl, Sam. She can't
because
be driving.
She's a woman.
She's a woman. She can't possibly drive.
I may be possessed, but at least I'm a man.
There's so many hacky idiot bits where he does that thing where he's like, whoops, I drove back to the place I wasn't supposed to. But also I forgot on the altar when mummy gets up there and she's like running her fingers down her stomach and he's like, that tickles. Like,
oh God, I forgot about that part.
I was like, God, I'm going to fucking throw up. So they incidentally return back to the mummy spot in the car.
Yes. And then they turn around again. And then there's a big action scene where the various mummy zombies are trying to break into the car and get him.
Yes.
And because this is a Tom Cruise vehicle, there has to be a car crash and he's got to do some sort of stunt and blah, blah, blah.
So there is a car crash. Eventually they fight these mummies while they're driving. And then he's like slamming them into trees and shit like that, whatever. Yeah. And eventually, because they're in an ambulance, because it was the two paramedics that had gone to the crash site. Right.
Correct.
So they're in an ambulance and all of a sudden it goes off course and it tumbles down a hill.
Yep.
And he's thrown from the car. Blonde girl had buckled up. She's in the car. He runs up to her and they look in the distance and the mummy is walking toward them because she's magical.
Right.
And then blonde girl goes, "Get her, Nick. Kick her ass." And I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
The fucking, it's so. Because
all he does is pick up a stick. And I'm like sitting there going, you're going to pick up a stick out of the woods that's probably half rotted and you're going to try and kick this mummy's butt?
She's an undead, possessed woman.
Yeah.
And you're going to hit her with a stick, a soggy stick.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself, Tom Cruise.
X-lax.
Ugh. But then here comes one of my other questions where all of a sudden there are little. I don't know what you would call them. Little arrows shot into the mummy. And
this is round two of the blow darts being used.
Yes, blow darts.
Shoot the mummy in the neck. That's darts. Her one weakness. Just load up like Clorox in her neck.
Exactly.
In a blow dart and shoot her in the neck. She'll never see it coming.
That's it. So she shot with blow darts again.
Yeah.
Then she shot with some ropes. And then they somehow confine her. And the people that are doing this are Crow's henchmen.
Yeah. So during the scene where she's being restrained, it's a gun. It shoots a harpoon, basically.
That's what I meant. Yes, yes, yes.
And the harpoon is connected to a chain so that they can essentially restrain her.
Right.
I don't know when the last time you watched Underworld Evolution was, the second one.
Oh, it's been a long time.
This basically rips off the first scene from that movie wholesale.
Really?
Because they found William. He is the first werewolf in that universe, which...
Is that Michael Sheen?
No, he is just an animatronic wolf, and that movie's so fucking good. So anyway, they're restraining him. And they're shooting him with like weapons. That's just a harpoon connected to a chain, a whole bunch of them. And then somebody shows up and says, "Oh, don't do that." Da 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 da. And so there was a lot of Underworld Evolution vibes, which is like the fourth movie that this movie is ripping off. even if in a small way.
It's just, it feels like there's like a handful of like movie sci-fi / adventure / fantasy fiction stuff that like it just gets recycled over and over and over again.
I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but the image of like lots of harpoon guns being shot into one person is very specific. Maybe that's a trope that I don't know of.
I don't know.
I need to watch more movies.
Well, tell you what, we've now seen it in at least two. Let's just keep watching movies and see if that happens. So anyway, Russell Crowe, it's his group, right? So
yes,
they get the girl, they get Tom Cruise, they get the mummy. And this is where he wakes up in the, what did I call it? Prodigium? It is the
perineum.
That'd be great. It is the prodigium.
I'm going to call it the perineum just because.
In the perineum. So he gets to basically a lab. He gets to do like a stupid looking, what looks to be like an unused scene from any Batman movie. And in this set where it's like a big window, but it's an office. And then Russell Crowe comes in fucking with a stupid butt cut and his suit. And he's like
40 pounds overweight.
I know. Poor man.
He's tubby Russell Crowe.
Tubby Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
And he's not really delivering a lot of information. He's just like
talking.
He's just talking about nothing. For as much as there is duplication of exposition in this movie, there's also a lot of talking that literally gives you nothing.
Right.
It's
not even character building stuff. Mm-mm. It's just fluff.
No. The only thing that we learn that blonde woman actually works for him. And then I think he takes Tom Cruise down to the lab is what I would call it.
Right.
It's like a big lab inside a giant warehouse in London is what it feels like. And so we see the mummy is chained up in the middle and they're pumping mercury into her veins.
Which question, and we haven't quite gotten there yet, but how long does it take to embalm a 110 plus, pound girl with mercury?
Because
it seems like it takes
minutes.
Well, it seems like it takes an hour and a half.
I know. I was like, it really shouldn't take
because
that
she has multiple extended conversations with various people in the cast and
switching
just
languages.
Is there in the background of other scenes.
It's,
and she's still being embalmed. And yet she is just perfectly fine. like there's no detrimental effect. It's just a thing that's happening.
It's just a fucking thing that's happening. So, you know, like we're introduced to the fact that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, because we see Dr. Jekyll also inject himself with the anti-Hyde solution, I would say.
Right. And which is kind of an inverse of what that actually is. Isn't in the book. And now I have not read the book of either. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, but it was my understanding that Jekyll was the primary personality. And then when he wants to turn into Mr. Hyde, he drinks the solution.
Oh, perhaps it is.
As opposed to they're treating it almost like a weird Incredible Hulk type of situation.
That
where
was going
to
be actually
when he gets super mad, he has to do something to stop it.
Exactly. So I don't know because I don't know the original source material. Right. And good job. We did none of the research, but
love it.
Love it. So that is what that's the type of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because there is a scene very shortly after this where you see Dr. Jekyll turn into Mr. Hyde.
And the look is horrible. It's just stupid lame. Crap.
I'm like, he just seems like a drunken football fan. He just all of a sudden is Cockney Dr. Jekyll. That's it. He's like, all right, love, I guess we're going to do some fucking shit here, aren't we? That's it. I'm like, he doesn't even get bigger. He kind of gets stronger, but not really. It's just he gets like, and he doesn't even, because when you, the first scene where he starts to kind of change, you see green running through his veins in his face and they start to like pulse. And I'm like, oh, strong Hulk vibes, as you mentioned.
Right.
And I was like, oh, maybe he's going to literally change into a monster. He doesn't. He's just kind of a sweatier version of Russell Crowe.
As terrible as the movie is, this was like the Dr. Jekyll and Hyde aspect was done better in A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Oh, my God. I didn't see that movie.
Pitch it.
That's what,
the last movie that Sean Connery ever did. Oh, I'm sure it's going to be on the list at some point.
What a bad idea, sir.
I think that's when he realized, okay. Check, please.
He's like, yeah, hey, God, check, please. I'd like to get out of here. Thank you. So anyway, there's, you know, there's another scene where they're down in the lab and Tom Cruise is like having a conversation with the mummy. Let me go ahead and say this, where they're having a conversation because he's possessed by her or her chosen, he can understand things. He's been given additional information about the past. He can also speak the language of like ancient Egyptian.
Right.
Then she starts speaking fucking English. What the fucking fuck? We already have ancient Egyptian being spoken with subtitles. Do that.
Were they just too lazy?
Do that.
Yeah.
Why is she speaking English?
And the thing is, okay, if you are the secret society that's out to destroy a bunch of ancient evil, you're basically Supernatural Shield is what Russell Crowe's group is.
For sure.
Why are you letting this conversation take place? Because there are multiple shots where Blondie wants to run up and stop this. Yeah. And he's like, no, don't do that. Don't stop that.
No, stop. Hold on.
And you'll soon learn that his plan is so stupid that it makes zero sense.
So from what I think we learn,
Put that in quotes, learn.
Learn in quotes, I guess, as a viewer. It seemed to me that Russell Crowe's solution, because after Tom Cruise has this long, uninterrupted conversation with the mummy, they go back into Dr. Jekyll's office and Dr. Jekyll's like, well, you know, there's only one thing we need to do. And the blonde girl goes, oh, you're just going to kill Tom Cruise? And Tom Cruise is like, whoa, what are you talking about? And so I'm like, okay, wait a second. Let me understand this. So the mummy wants to stab Tom Cruise. Also, right. Dr. Jekyll wants to stab Tom Cruise.
And the infuriating thing about this is that they superimpose over the sequence of his team finding the stone that they need for the dagger, which is now in Russell Crowe's custody in London.
Yeah.
So I said, why don't you just call your guys in London and say, hey, break that rock.
Yeah.
And then you can't do the shit. But he's like, no, we're going to let her stab you and then we'll kill you.
Yeah, I was like, so how does it make sense that, okay, for all intents and purposes, I'm putting air quotes around this, the bad guy is the mummy, this woman.
Right.
Because we're saying she's the bad guy because she's wreaking havoc. What she wants is to stab Tom Cruise.
Has she really wreaked that much havoc, though?
Well, I mean, she's made zombies she's out like of some poor guys. EMTs. I mean, it's not great. Not a great look. Also, during their stupid conversation where he's like, but you killed your father and your baby brother. And she was like, they were different times. And I'm like, oh, bitch just got canceled. Like, she just got fucking
hashtag
canceled.
Omelette is over party.
So, but she wants to stab Tom Cruise. So why would it make sense that the bad guy wants to do a thing? And also the good guy, we say that if we think that Dr. Jekyll is also the one that's like, I'm going to save you. Cause he's not positioned as a bad guy. He's
right.
He's just positioned as a man and a researcher. He also wants to stab him. And I'm like,
yeah.
You should have two opposite agendas. You have the same agenda, which
it's basically Tom Cruise versus the world at this point.
Exactly. I was like, this doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah.
Because guess what, guys? Spoiler alert. You know what happens? He stabs himself with a fucking knife. So the thing that everybody wants happens.
Yeah. So anyway, Chick somehow summons a spider while she's on the Mercury because she somehow can do this.
Right, sure.
And the spider crawls up into some dude's ear, which, okay, if it's supernatural magic, whatever. But I think this guy would have noticed. I mean, have you got to be completely brain dead to not realize that a giant, this thing is probably as big as your thumbnail.
It was a big ass spider.
And it crawls into his ear. And then, of course, he turns into a mind possessed zombie.
Sure.
Grabs an axe. Well, first of all, he stands up and walks away from his desk because he was the one monitoring the mercury flow, apparently.
Correct. Yeah.
So he stands up, walks away from his desk. You know, Stooge Carl over here is like, hey, what is going on with the day? What's going on with the Mercury Street? And so they flash over and his buddy, who is sitting no farther than I am from you, maybe 3 feet, is gone.
Yeah.
And he's slowly picking up an axe and everyone's just watching him. Just watching him. They're probably like what are you doing with that axe? Oi, oi. How about you put it down? What you need that for? And so Stooge slowly.
Don't make me get up from here.
I ain't paid enough to get up from here. And so I apologize to any British viewers of this, listeners of this episode. So he walks over to what is presumably the electrical
panel. Yeah.
And strikes it with the axe, which I guess stops the mercury, but at the same time, if she's being embalmed, the mercury is already in her.
Yeah, exactly.
So what, I guess it stops more from going in there. But wait, there's more because Jekyll needs to take his stuff. But Tom Cruise says, no, you're not going to take that stuff because I'm mad at you right now. You said you're going to kill me. And so I guess they have a lockdown procedure from where, you know, Mr. Hyde goes on a bender.
Yeah.
And so they lock him in the room. Yeah. It's Tom Cruise and Mr. Hyde locked in a room and they're beating each other up.
Right.
Which is stupid dumb.
Tom Cruise is holding his own against a monster.
Yeah. No. Well, I guess he's semi-god possessed. Whatever. This movie sucks.
Tagline of this podcast. So, this movie sucks.
Yeah. This one's a bad one. And I hate to rag on stuff like this because I know a lot of work goes into these, but
I know.
Doggone it.
I know.
Couldn't you have like done something better?
Truly the writing. I mean, because it's not like bad special effects. It's not bad actors, and it's not bad, like, you know, set design. It's none of that. And like, there are some stuff that is interesting. So like following this, when the mummy breaks free,
which, okay, maybe this is, I'm going to make a point and maybe it's a nitpick and maybe it's not. She just randomly decides to break her own chains.
I know. I was like, bitch, you could have done that from the fucking beginning.
Right. Now they show a shot of her vomiting up the mercury.
Yeah, which I liked.
Did that happen before she broke the chains? Because that's the only reason I can think of that she couldn't break the chains earlier.
I don't remember. I don't remember the order.
We'll give the movie credit for that and say that she had to vomit it up, which, okay, why couldn't she just have been vomiting the entire time?
The whole time, yeah.
As opposed to when they stopped pumping it into you? Couldn't you just be in a state of perpetual
vomiting? Yeah. I mean, you're undead. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. You know? I mean, I guess you're undead. We've decided that you're kind of a nebulous mummy, quote unquote. Anyway, so she breaks out. She breaks out of their facility. Tom Cruise and Blondie get out of the facility, which I guess is in a museum.
Yeah, I fucking guess so.
I mean,
I was like, whatever.
You guys didn't notice that half your building was being used and you didn't know what it was?
It was housing nefarious shit. So as they're running out, the mummy calls forth to Set and she says, bring about the sands of Egypt or whatever. And all the glass.
Did she call to Set or did she say that just?
I would assume she would have called for Set to happen.
See, this is another instance of them not being explicit in what her power set is.
Exactly.
Because if she had giant sand powers and stuff like this, why doesn't she use it in more than just this one sequence?
Right. Exactly. Like, why don't we see more magnificence that she's that has been bestowed upon her?
Right.
Because there are times, and forgive me, I don't remember, but like where she does call upon Set, but it seems to be the times where it's like they're about to engage in the ritual and it gets interrupted or something exactly. like that. But yeah, she calls for like the sands of Egypt, which I thought was kind of cool because all of a sudden all the glass in the building breaks and shatters. And
right.
turns into sand because that's what glass is, right? It's minute pieces of...
Oh, is that what was happening? I just thought it was just breaking. I didn't know that it was converting to...
I didn't think about that until... So when you see... She says this. She calls for the sands of Egypt. All the glass shatters. It like powders. It like turns into powder. And you see Tom Cruise and Blondie running through the museum and then running into the streets and then running through all the blocks of London. And all behind them, every window in London is shattering and exploding into a cloud of sand. And it's because sand is made of tiny pieces of glass.
Now, the question I have is, were all of these glass panes made in Egypt? Or if it yep. was made in Israel, would that set glass have not broken?
Well, that was my question too. Because at first I go, okay, we're exploding glass. And I go, oh, sand is made of tiny pieces of glass. Okay, got it. And then I was like, yeah, but she calls for the sands of Egypt. I'm like, so what?
Because we're in London. You could probably write that off as just being dramatic and all this crap. Well,
you could write, but if under that logic, you'd write off all the other shit that happens true. In this movie.
That's
so
true.
I don't.
If she just called up a sandstorm, that's fine because there's dirt all over the place.
Right. Or just even doesn't say anything and just explodes all the fucking glass and like it's right. the same sequence without saying that. I'm like, cool, whatever.
Yeah.
So somehow they get into the sewers, right?
I don't even remember how they get into
either.
The sewers. They get into like the subway,
oh,
I guess.
No, because they go, oh, we got to go find that stone. That stone is in the sewers where the Knights Templar cave was.
That's how they get in the subway.
Again, whatever.
Like at this point, my notes
whatever.
Are so sparse at this point.
Doesn't matter. So like everybody kind of shows up at the Templar cave and this is where shit goes down, right? So because it was explained to us during the news broadcast at the beginning of the movie that when this Templar temple was stumbled upon, they're like, oh, we see all of these sarcophagi. Is that right?
We'll say that.
Sarcophaguses.
But then never mind.
All these dead things.
Anyway.
And they're like, oh, part of it is submerged in water. So like they're running through, there's zombies. There's a bunch of zombie guys running after Tom Cruise and blonde girl. JJ shows up and Tom Cruise is like, oh, thank God you're here, whatever. And he's like, yeah, dude, I just got to take you to fucking Aminet and like be done with this. And he's like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, did you not think that was how this was going to go down?
Right. He's the guy that's been put in your head after you got cursed.
Yeah. Hello.
Like he's not Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah. So they're running around through all of these underground tunnels. Then they get into the temple thing and then they get into the water part of the temple. Mm. By the way, zombies can swim.
That's what I was saying. I'm like, if these are real mummies, wouldn't they just be falling apart in water?
Yeah.
Which they show a couple of like dust clouds, like part of it is coming off. And maybe that's just dirt or dust from their initial unveiling. But the sight of mummy swimming is unironically funny.
I wrote down because initially in my notes, there was like a scene where the mummies aren't able. Oh, Tom Cruise and blonde girl fall into some water because a Templar mummy has held onto blonde girl and they fight in the water. And then the Templar mummy starts to sink. And I go, oh, it turns out fucking mummies and zombies can't swim.
Yeah, that would have made sense.
Oh, no. 30 seconds later, a whole troop of them starts swimming.
Exactly. So maybe it's just that one guy never learned how to swim.
And that one guy never learned how to swim. So
important lesson here, folks. Learn how to swim.
Yeah. So the mummy, she shows up because she's fucking magic. I don't even know why there's a chase scene because she can just materialize wherever she fucking wants to be.
Yeah. Wherever the plot desires her to be, she can be.
Yeah. So she like materializes as a part where they're in the water. She grabs blonde girl and takes her away. Tom Cruise goes to
because
try.
Why? She's not after Blondie.
Literally no fucking reason. No reason.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because we got to throw that girl in the fridge.
Sure do. Ay, Dios mio. Tom Cruise swims away trying to rescue blonde girl. We get dead Knights Templar zombies swimming after him. It's kind of a funny scene.
It's really funny.
I enjoyed it. I did.
That's the only kind
it
of.
It was a giggle.
It was a giggle.
Yeah. So he goes over and grabs the drowned body of blonde girl. And all of them, this all of these people, dead and undead alike, are pulled up to the surface. They're in this kind of cavernous thing. And dead blonde woman, they set her kind of like in a tide pool.
Puddle right in front of them.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. She's there. She's clearly dead. Tom Cruise is there and he's apparently upset.
Now, like, she was a one night stand that you hung out with for like a day.
Like, I guess they've had some trauma bonding over the past 24 hours, but he really doesn't seem to give that much of a shit about her.
Yeah. They're treating her like she's the love of his life.
I know. I was like,
and it's not there.
Make them have a relationship somehow, or a long standing relationship. Like, they've been on and off for years, or they were, you know, college sweethearts, and then they've always had this thing, but it was unexplained. Like, explain a history between them as to why he would be upset at this point.
Well, they tried to do a scene where back in Jekyll's area, the mummy's being involved with Mercury, and him, Cruise and Blondie are sitting there on a balcony above Mummy Girl.
Yeah.
And this is their attempted bonding moment.
This.
She's like, oh, you saved my life, so I'm so indebted for you. Because I guess she's super in love with him now because
he saved her life during the plane crash.
And he gives this line like, I thought there was another. As if like that would change the reason why he gave her the parachute. And again, this is all being done while they're watching the mummy being embalmed with... It's so weird. It's just, why are you doing this?
It felt like a reshoot, like they had to put that in there somehow. But anyway,
to try and give them some sort of connection.
Yeah.
And it just.
So this is essentially the final scene. Thank fucking God that we are there already.
Like it was 6 hours in.
So everybody, thank you for sticking around with us. Let's go ahead and dive into this final scene. They're in the cave. Dead blonde girl. We've got upset Tom Cruise for some reason. Don't know why. Mummy is like, come to me. You know, like, I will take all of your pain away. You will be able to defeat death. You will be the master of death, you know, like whatever, all this stuff. And so she's in front of him. And then he like, you catch like a glimpse of him, like going to touch the dagger. And I'm like, okay, she's been pretty savvy this whole movie. All of a sudden this one scene, she doesn't notice that he's about to steal a fucking knife from her.
Okay. My question about this entire scene.
Yeah.
First of all, he gets up and he runs at her because he's angry.
Yeah.
And she pimp slaps the fuck out of him.
That was great.
It's the best part of this movie. It's just this wide shot of him running over and her just slapping him down like
goes,
a bitch.
Whack.
Just bam, and his face goes into the concrete. And that's the best part of the movie.
It
that's
truly
all
is.
You need to see.
It was, and
that's
it was
internet
also
meme material.
It was intentional joke that actually came off as a joke. It was a successful joke.
Yes, that was great. So
that's right. I forgot about that part.
Oh yeah, I made a note of that because
like,
my wife and I both laughed our asses off at this.
Oh my god.
Then what she does after this, she just beats his ass. You want to stab him with the knife. You have the knife.
Yeah.
The jewel is in the knife.
Fucking do it.
Just stab him.
Just stab him.
Now, does he have to choose to do this? If so, the movie has never implied or told us that this needs to happen. Just stab his ass.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because she's been referring to him as her chosen throughout this whole thing. As in, like you were saying, like someone that willfully goes into this.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that's not what his position has been.
I mean, to be fair, it's called The Chosen, not The Volunteer.
Yeah. I just imagined The Rocketeer when you said that. And I was like, imagine Tom Cruise with the rocket.
Now I want to see a movie with mummies with jetpacks.
God, yes. Although I haven't seen the newest Zack Snyder, so I don't know.
Gosh, his was Army of the Dead. That was actually pretty entertaining.
Are there zombies
movie.
With jetpacks?
They don't have jetpacks, no.
Damn.
But there are zombies.
What a potential. So anyway, he steals the blade away from her.
Yes.
She either kicks his ass or he rolls away or something like that.
Yeah, she throws him away because he gives another horrible line.
Oh my God, stop.
You and me, we're never going to happen. Like,
it's
really?
Not me, it's you.
Ugh.
It so bad. I rewound it to watch it again.
See, I didn't do that to myself.
No, I did because I was like, no way this just happened. There's no way. There's no way. That he got real quippy at the end here because she's holding him up by his neck.
Yeah.
She has
superpowers.
He's
in a bad place. Of course, at the same time, he can't die. He survived a plane crash.
Yeah. He cannot die.
So whether or not, I mean, I'm sure it hurts that she's beating his ass, but sure. She cannot kill him.
No, because of the curse that logic. She's put on him. Yeah, exactly. So
anyway, she throws him away. Mm-hmm. And the twist is that he grabbed the knife while before she threw him.
Yeah.
And so he's got the knife.
Ew.
And so I'm going to stab myself. But she looks surprised by this.
She looks so shocked.
Isn't that exactly what she wanted?
I know. I'm like, bitch, do it. Let him do it.
Just be like, okay, first, go ahead, stab yourself.
At first he's like, I'm going to destroy it. So he takes the butt of the knife, essentially.
Where the jewel is.
The jewel, and bangs it on the ground. And it's like,
It cracks
and there's kind of a shudder through things. But what makes him decide to stab himself? Now I can't remember.
Because she told him that you can be the master of death.
And he looks over at
Blondie and says, oh, maybe I can bring her. Well, he doesn't say it, but implication is that I can bring her back to life if I'm the master of death.
Exactly.
And so then he stabs himself.
Yes.
And I forget what the fuck happens. I mean, apparently Set goes in there, but apparently Set is kind of a beta because he doesn't really take over
Cruz's
body.
I just, so a lot of what this movie reminded me of, just that idea of like, essentially this devil figure, this evil demon or whatever coming forth into the mortal plane through a human body, reminded me of Constantine. So if you remember in Constantine,
it's been a long time, but yeah, go ahead.
So like, that's kind of what is supposed to happen in that movie. Right. But it is far more explicit, as in like literally the son of the devil will like rip his way through Rachel Weisz, poor Rachel Weisz. And obviously it doesn't come to fruition, but you know, whatever. Spoiler alert for Constantine. So yeah. So when Set goes into Tom Cruise's body, it's almost similarly a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing where they're both coexisting within this body, but Tom Cruise can fight him off, but then he kind of Set appears. And so it's like he has this just other personality swimming around in there.
Yeah.
And that,
because they have this moment where Set goes in there and you know it's Set because he does the split the double irises in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's looking at Amunet. And he's like, oh, yeah, I want to do whatever weird, you know, Egyptian death god shit that we do.
Yeah.
And then he looks over at Blondie and his eyes go back to a single iris. And he's like, no, I don't want to do this. And so it's just this whole weird thing. And then we've got a very unfortunate subtext reading scene where he kills the mummy. It's basically just Tom Cruise choking and beating up a girl.
Yep. And he looks,
the way that it's framed is really, really unfortunate.
It's also
it's
super,
like a domestic abuse scene.
It feels that way also because, so this whole movie, what we have been told is that Amunet has, in exchange for doing this thing for Set, which is bringing him forth into the mortal plane via a human body, she is given whatever power. Again, we're unclear on that.
Right.
But she seemed very joyful and excited to do this task, which is to find a human, to find a chosen, to bring forth Set. She's not like putting it off. She's like, yo, Set, I'll get to it. Don't worry. It's not like she's biding her time, enjoying her power. That's what her goal has been.
She's the minion.
So when Tom Cruise stabs himself, which is what everybody wants, as I mentioned.
Apparently.
Everybody wants this. Bad guys, good guys alike. Everybody fucking wants this. So the thing happens that everybody wants to happen. She looks scared and timid and trepidatious. And I'm like, why, girl? You wanted this the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Because what should happen, and what she has said to Tom Cruise to convince him earlier in this scene, is that she's like, you will be the Lord of Death. You will be the master of death, and I will live as your queen.
Mm-hmm.
And so she should be into this shit. She should be excited. She should be, yep, we did this. Look at what has transpired. But she looks timid and scared. And then he beats her up and sucks her soul out of her fucking mouth.
Yeah. Through a kiss, which is again, really unfortunate because he's choking her at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that can be broken down in this scene.
Yeah.
Visually speaking, all the visual language is treating you to believe that this is really, really bad.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of feel for the mummy in this scene.
You do, because like, I was like, what has she gotten out of this? I mean, because truly, if all she wanted was revenge on her father for taking away her throne, she got that thousands of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like, what else? And like we said, she didn't even need Set to do that. She could have just stabbed her dad in the night. I mean, like, come on.
Yeah.
So anyway, he did this. I think he kind of did the The Mummy Dirty. Truthfully, it was kind
for
of
a movie called The Mummy.
For a movie called The Mummy. And she's an unfortunate, shriveled up little soul right there.
Yeah.
He runs over to blonde girl, screams in her face, and she comes back to life.
Yeah. Again, this reminds me of, do you remember in The Avengers when Tony Stark flies the nuke up into the portal and then he kind of falls back to Earth and he's like deadish. And then the Hulk screams at him and he wakes up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's basically what I thought of.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So she wakes up and then she has a conversation with Tom Cruise, who's now standing in the shadows, and you can hear in his stupid voice that he's half Tom Cruise, half demon, and that he's just going to exist that way. And he says something cliched like, I wish we had more time.
And it's like, why? You were just a one night stand for him to get this map for stuff he could steal.
Yeah. Y'all didn't, y'all were not into each other.
No.
Like it's super stupid. And then we get a voiceover at the end. Russell Crowe comes back to tell us that now, well, also the logic of this, but Russell Crowe tells us he now lives as a monster on Earth, essentially. But we know that essentially he's going to help us. What does he say? He says,
it's basically like an Avengers style.
He says, find a cure.
But you can't because you're possessed.
But a cure for what?
Right.
Because that's the thing. While Dr. Jekyll is initially earlier in the movie where he's like, oh, well, the only solution is we stab you. And it's like, but why? He's like, well, to combat some things on Earth. But does he explain what that is?
Okay. The thought process here is, oops.
Because I got really headphones. Confused about that. I was like, what are we trying to fight here?
The thought process here is, like I mentioned earlier, that the view is that Set, the god of death, is evil.
Right.
So he wants, or at least at the time, it's implied that, you know, Jekyll wants
right.
Set to go into Cruise. They kill Cruise and therefore kill Set.
Set, yeah.
To get an evil.
Right. So you need him
board.
To be mortal so they can kill him.
Right. But if they're saying that's not possible now, then why did you want that in the first place? I feel like you guys should have done more research.
Yeah. It just, so now what we're hearing in this voiceover is that Tom Cruise is living as essentially a superhero. He's superhero. He can no longer die because he's the master of death. And apparently
he couldn't die before because he was under the curse.
Exactly. So he brings back JJ, which is in a stupid scene where they're in the desert and JJ's like, I'm really glad you brought me back and everything. And I was like, no shit, JJ, we can fucking see you. We can see you. It's not his fault. It's the writing.
Oh, of course. That's the number one problem here.
But it in like they run off into the desert and it's just.
And one thing, too. And this is kind of going back just a hair, you know, Tom Cruise stabs himself, gets Set in him.
Yeah.
And then kills the mummy. And then he like limps over to Blondie.
Yeah.
If you've got a god inside of you, why are you limping?
Why are you limping? You should be.
You should be like as jacked and as built and as ready to go as you've ever been. That should be like a super power boost.
You should have powers. Yeah. And we don't see that. All we see is that now it seems.
He gets pointy teeth and a couple of weird irises and that's it.
That's about it. And he can bring people back from the dead by yelling at them. So in the very end, we've got this shot, high, you know, like a helicopter shot through the desert. And we see JJ and Tom Cruise riding off into the desert on another stupid adventure. And
that we'll never see.
Exactly. Russell Crowe has got his voiceover and he's like, sometimes it takes a monster to fight a monster, essentially saying we now have Tom Cruise on our side. He's our ally. Yes, he is a conflicted being, but he's essentially a superhero that will work for good using this bad power within him. Now, here's my question. Clearly, this leads us into what naturally would have been, had this been successful, a second Mummy movie and also probably integrating that character into other of the monster universe. Does he have a movie monster name? No.
No.
He doesn't. He's just Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And his name is Nick in the movie.
Yeah, Nick something. I don't even remember.
His name is Nick. He doesn't get a...
Some call me Nick.
He's not Set. He doesn't have a... He's not like the Dark Rider. He doesn't have a moniker at all.
Yeah.
He's just a dude. That's the fucking thing. And I was like, if we're introducing him as a hero, as an anti-hero or a conflicted hero for future movies, give him a goddamn name.
Right.
Something.
Yeah.
And then the movie ends. Thank God.
Yeah. Oof. Long story short, this movie is bad. There is nothing redeemable about it. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong.
Yeah.
And save yourself 2 hours and just listen to this podcast.
Yeah. I think you would be better off listening to our critique of it.
I'd rather watch Van Helsing again than watch this movie.
I think you're right, because at least Van Helsing is funny and cheesy and
stupid,
like,
and entertaining.
Exactly.
And none of that is in this movie.
It's not silly enjoyable. It's just unenjoyable. It really is not. It's not great. I mean, like, I was trying to think of anything positive about it, and I'm like,
the Tom Cruise bitch slap, and that's it.
Basically. Some of the mummy looking like special effects are kind of cool in that it looks creepy, but like, it doesn't look novel. I mean, there are a lot of creepy movies out there.
Yeah. It doesn't do anything that other movies haven't done.
Exactly.
Except for slap Tom Cruise.
And for that, it deserves an Academy Award. All right, guys. Thank you for sticking with us through all of that. We now are moving into the second and final segment of the show, the pitches.
The pitches.
This is the segment of the show where one of us, this week it's me, will blind pitch to Sam 3 movies. He will select one of those, and that will be our movie that we watch for next week. Sam, are you ready?
Giddy up.
Number 1. A race of aliens awakens to find that their annexed land has been populated by tiny parasites. A family of diminutive escape artists runs amok, attempting to flee this earth-shattering scene.
Okay.
Number 2. Love holds no bounds. Through sickness, health, life, and death it pervades. An unlikely family forms across space and time, only to realize that one of their own might be the cause of their troubles.
All right.
And number 3. One part crooked teeth, one part America's sweetheart, and a healthy handful of raspberries shake with flair until fully mixed. This classic drink pairs best with the smutty world of business as well as the fucktastic world of the service industry.
Okay.
I will repeat those when you're ready. I feel like you're...
No, the first one I thought I had, but then I don't. The first impulses I got for the first one were Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, but that's not it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's not it, because you mentioned family and dorm and stuff. I just don't think that's it.
Okay.
The second one was very generic.
Yes.
Found family, cross stars, bada bada.
Yep.
Third one. Would you read the third one for
me? I will read the third one again. Number 3. One part crooked teeth, one part America's sweetheart, and a healthy handful of raspberries. Shake with flair until fully mixed. This classic drink pairs best with the smutty world of business as well as the fucktastic world of service industry.
Why am I thinking of Office Space for the third movie?
That's a real...
Now, the only thing that trips me up on that one is crooked teeth.
That's really funny.
Everything
really
else funny. Fits. Everything else fits.
That's great, actually.
So let's see.
So number 1 is about a race of aliens annexed by tiny parasites. Number 2 is about...
I feel like I should know that one, but
love holds no bounds through everything. There's an unlikely family that forms. And then number 3 is the cocktail of crooked teeth and sweethearts and raspberries and business and the service industry.
Yeah, that's like the third one. The two movies that are just jumping to my mind, and I'm 100% positive that neither one of these are in. But of course, Office Space and Pretty Woman.
Okay. Yeah. No, you think both of those are number 3, or you think either of those could be for number 3?
Oh, I mean, they're not. But that's just what jumped into my mind.
That's very funny. Do you have any guesses for 1 or 2?
Gosh. I mean, number 2 is so...
It is pretty generic.
It's not... I at least maybe I'm just... had enough to drink that I cannot process.
It's okay.
That in that facility, that capacity.
It's very generic. like I said, I'm not super proud of actually these. These are not my favorite pitches.
No, it's
that I've
okay.
written.
We all have our bad weeks. I know I've had some where I just kind of wrote crap out and chairs scraped the floor. Gosh, I'm trying to remember which ones that we have tended to pick more than others. It's usually the
middle one. It's usually number two that we have really? Picked.
That's not going to be the case this week. Okay, so I'm going to go between pick? One and three.
Okay.
Or A and C if we're going by a numerical yep. pattern. You know, we're just going to go with A. I feel like I should know this.
Great.
But let's do it.
All right. You have chosen The War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise.
Oh, I didn't necessarily know Escape Artist, but yeah, the rest of it makes sense.
They just run okay. a lot in that movie.
That's true. No. Okay. Yeah.
So have you seen it?
When I first came out, my wife and I watched it.
I think it was 2005. Five. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have watched it, but it's been a long time.
Got it. So same with me. I believe I've seen it.
And I remember having problems with it because this was directed by Spielberg. Am I not?
I think you're right.
Am I correct?
I believe you're right. So number two. About love holding no bounds, an unlikely family to realize one of their own might be the cause of their troubles. Interview with a Vampire.
Damn, I would have liked to have watched that one.
Yep. And then number three, about the crooked teeth, America's sweetheart, raspberries, and then a cocktail of business and service industry.
Risky business?
Cocktail.
Oh, cocktail.
Exactly. And I mix up those two names. So the theme for this week.
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise's Razzie nominations or award winners.
He got a Razzie for Interview with a Vampire?
Yep. And it was for worst screen couple with him and Brad Pitt. So he was nominated for a Razzie.
You know, also funny that we mentioned Interview with a Vampire because last week we talked about Spider-Man 3 where I mentioned that her best role was probably Interview with the Vampire.
I know. I was kind of wishing you were going to catch that one.
You should have given me more to chew on there.
I know.
I'm sorry.
That was a bad pitch.
It's all right.
So War of the Worlds, he was nominated for the Worst Actor Razzie. He won the Worst Screen Couple with Brad Pitt Razzie for Interview with the Vampire. And he was nominated for Worst Actor in Cocktail for a Razzie. So
I didn't know the Razzies existed when Cocktail came out.
They started in 1981. Can you believe it?
Man, I some reason thought that was a more recent phenomenon.
I know. It seems like it, but they've been around since 81.
Yeah, well, I'll be.
I think the internet definitely helped their exposure.
That's true.
Yeah.
I still think it's funny that Halle Berry went in person and accepted her Razzie for
fucking
Catwoman.
Amazing.
And just said,
what a
I
bad
hope
bitch.
To never be here again.
Yeah, she was just like, I can't believe I'm winning. That. Like, she was so tongue-in-cheek. It was very funny. She was fully aware of what was going on.
The theme
of this week was Tom Cruise Razzies. When I was trying to put together pitches for this, like I said, I was either going to do May-December romances, like either movies that had like young person, older person romances. Uh-huh. And I looked at a lot of those and I was like, ugh, so many of these are creepy with intention. And then I thought we haven't done any that have just been a similar actor or a similar director, you know, or anything like that. And I was like, well, it's not enough to just put Tom Cruise movies. We've got to put the worst Tom Cruise movies.
That's
in here.
True.
So
that's
for
true.
Next week, The War of the Worlds.
Yeah. See, I would have probably done first time directors.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really
good
one.
Because you had Kurtzman doing this one.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to one at me next week.
I'll figure something out for next week.
Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us this week for The Mummy. If you like this show, why don't you go ahead and subscribe? Why don't you go ahead and rate and review? If you'd like to follow us on Instagram, you can find us at Storage Room Movie Boom. On Twitter at Storage Room Pod, and you can send us an OG email at storageroompod@gmail.com.
Very good.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thank you.